Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
Our troops will have a well-defined mission to help Iraqis clear and secure neighborhoods, to help them protect the local population, and to help ensure that the Iraqi forces left behind are capable of providing the security that Baghdad needs.
President Bush, of course, from his Iraq address last night. We will get reaction now from a Democrat and a Republican from our local congressional delegation, a military analyst, retired Air Force colonel and War College instructor, Sam Gardner, who's been a critic of the war, and from Frederick Kagan, who I think it's called, who it's fair to call one of the architects of this new plan. Up first is Republican Congressman Christopher Shays of Connecticut, a longtime supporter of the war who began to turn late last year. Congressman, welcome back to WNYC. Good morning.
Hi. Can I just dispute your description of turning?
Go ahead.
I have been a supporter of this effort. I believe it's a noble cause. I have been a staunch critic of the mistakes we've made. And what you call as a leaving, I just said we need to give the Iraqis a timeline so they start doing the heavy lifting.
Fair enough. Are you in favor of the plan the president announced last night?
Yeah, I think it should have happened a long time ago. And I think that it is new. We have a new team. It is a new plan. We're going to weed out, we're going to hold, and we're going to build. And I think this is kind of like the last chance. This is it. And we need to hold the president accountable for the benchmarks and the Iraqis accountable for the benchmarks.
How will we hold the Iraqis accountable for the benchmarks? One of the criticisms that I've heard of the president's speech is that he didn't set any specific timetables or lay out any specific consequences for the Iraqis if they don't do the things that he asked.
And I think that's a legitimate criticism, and I think that's where Congress has a role. Congress has a role in oversight. We didn't do it as well as I would have liked us to have done. The Democrats can do it. They can say to the president, what are the benchmarks? When will they be reached? What do you expect from the Iraqis? And when do you think they'll do that? And that's a fair kind of oversight that supports the president as commander-in-chief, but then holds him accountable.
But would you support this deployment if the president does not come up with more specifics to those questions?
Well, that's a good question, and I think I don't. I mean, in other words, my support is conditional on the Iraqis doing what they need to do. And one of my recommendations, the president said, okay, keep the recommendations coming, folks. My recommendation is show me before we start exerting ourselves more fully. Show me that Maliki is going to do what he said. Show me that he's going to treat Sunnis and Shias equally as prime minister of all of Iraq.
Democratic leader of the House, Speaker Nancy Pelosi, has indicated that she may hold a vote next week on a resolution for people to put on the table whether they support or oppose this deployment. Would you consider yourself undecided at this point?
No, I think it's a good political move for her, but she's not doing what I would have suggested, and that is just say, okay, this is your decision as commander-in-chief. We want to hear the benchmarks, and we want to know what the consequences are. I think that is a more constructive way for the Speaker of the House and the number third person in line to the presidency who should act.
But if there is this political move by the Speaker that forces you to go on record with an up or down vote,
I would probably vote supportive of our going, because I believe that would be more of a political motion, just as I think Republicans did a number of political motions. I think that we have a choice. We can say we don't want to throw good money after bad and leave, or we can say we have a plan that will do what we should have done before. You know, I mean, a lot of Democrats said we needed to put more, not less. a lot of Democrats said we shouldn't stay the course. So the president isn't staying the course. He's brought in a new team. Now they're criticizing him, saying, well, now he's got a team that thinks the way he does. No, he got rid of a team that advised him badly and has brought in a team that is advising him differently.
David Gergen said on CNN last night, Congressman, that under the Petraeus model, the president says he's following the new U.S. commander there, David Petraeus, it would take 250,000 troops to have the ratio of troops to population that Petraeus has written about in
for all of Iraq, and he's right, for all of Iraq. So what we're doing is we are trying this out in the one area where we have 80% of the killings. And there, I think the ratios he's following pretty much to Petraeus. I'm not sure about that. I'm going to check it out, but I believe that's true.
Let me play you another clip of the president from his speech last night and get your reaction or analysis about part
sure.
of this.
Our past efforts to secure Baghdad failed for two principal reasons. There were not enough Iraqi and American troops to secure neighborhoods that had been cleared of terrorists and insurgents, and there were too many restrictions on the troops we did have. Our military commanders reviewed the new Iraqi plan to ensure that it addressed these mistakes. They report that it does. They also report that this plan can work.
So the two things that he mentioned as failures in the past, not enough Iraqi and American troops, we talked about that, and too many restrictions on the troops we did have. Will you
right.
talk about that?
Well, I mean, the bottom line is that Maliki and his government was afraid to confront some of the Shias, then restraining what we did. It is mind-boggling when you think about it that we would go into an area and clean it up and then not maintain it. And so it is a criticism that of himself and what the former leadership in defense did that I think is frankly inexcusable.
Congressman Christopher Shays, Republican of Connecticut, my guest on WNYC, the first of four. We will have this hour reacting to the president's new plan, and we will take your phone calls a little later in the hour. So when you talk about the Maliki government being afraid to go in to the Shiite areas, some people say, Joe Klein, for example, the commentator, said on CNN last night that, hey, Maliki is a fig leaf for these Shiite militias. He's for the Shiite militias, and that he has called for no increase in U.S. troops because he wants to do Baghdad his way. Do you agree with that analysis?
Well, you know what? I have a lot of respect for Klein, and so I want to think about what he says. I mean, I don't agree that he's a fig leaf. I do think the second point is interesting, that he's wanted to do it on his own, and that is true. His plan was to do it on his own. But again, what was one of the huge mistakes we made? We said we wanted, as the Iraqis stood up, we'd stand down, but we only stood up 138,000 Iraqis. Last year, I was trying to get the numbers as to what Iraqis would need so we could step down. And so the bottom line is we have not trained enough Iraqis to do what Maliki needs to do according to his own plan. He didn't have enough of his own people.
Mitch McConnell, the Senate Minority Leader, says the war has been a success, at least to this extent, that we have not been attacked again in the United States since 9/11. And he attributes that to some degree to pinning al-Qaeda down in Iraq as opposed to letting them work elsewhere and plan to attack the U.S. here. How much do you agree with that?
Very little. I think somewhat, but I wouldn't be making that argument because al-Qaeda thinks in terms of 8 years. I mean, they didn't attack us directly in the Twin Towers for 8 years. It was 93 to 2001. And we weren't fighting in Iraq then. So I think that argument is a stretch.
The president said the troops didn't stay long enough in the past to hold the cleared areas.
They didn't stay at all.
But even if we hold now or hold for a long time, why wouldn't the enemies just lie low until we think we've cleared and held, then reappear when we leave?
Well, I mean, that's a good argument, but I would say this. What we do is we go in, we have Iraqis go door to door, clean out the nests, so the nests aren't there. So your argument is that they just go somewhere else. And that is, I think, the biggest fear. Will the 80% of the violence go into other parts of Iraq? I don't think it will, but that would be an indication that then it's hopeless.
Go into other parts of Iraq. Or, since Al-Qaeda, at least for their part in this, does work on that long kind of timeline.
No, but
describing.
Then we're going to be training more than 138,000 Iraqis. You know, I've never been under the impression that we leave Iraq peaceful. My impression is we use the Israeli model. We have a government that can function in spite of the violence in its midst. But we attacked Iraq. We abolished all their security. We have a moral obligation to replace their security, whatever government is in charge.
Well, how close do you think they are to be able to stand up in that way? If 150,000 Americans can't provide security, and you know the U.S. Army is the best in the world,
part of the equation.
How quickly?
This is the other part. I believe in the Iraqi study group. The second part of their equation was first replace Americans with Iraqis. The second part was that Sunnis and Shias need to make peace with each other. And if they don't, there will be consequences. That's what the study group says. That's what we have to agree to. In other words, along with this Prime Minister Maliki, you have to start making peace. When I see Sunnis, they say the Shias aren't giving us enough. When I see Shias, they say the Sunnis want too much. When I speak to both of them, I say, well, you've got a perfect compromise. Shias, give them more. Sunnis, ask for less.
One other thing. Senator Kerry said on NPR last night that rather than emphasize the military right now, the Bush administration should be emphasizing the political. Set up something like the Dayton talks back in the Bosnia days and get all the parties together and have our diplomats really knock heads to get all those pieces of the political pie into place.
I think that's a very strong argument except for one thing. The Sunnis do not believe that the Shias are willing to treat them fairly, so they're never going to make an agreement until they see it. And this is the test for Maliki. He's got to show that he is going to act like the Prime Minister of Iraq, not the Prime Minister of the Shias. And so he's got to demonstrate that in Baghdad. And if he can demonstrate it in Baghdad, then the Sunnis are going to be more inclined to do what Senator Kerry wants them to do, make peace.
Congressman Christopher Shays, Republican of Connecticut, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Brian.
More views to come. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We'll take some of your calls now as we wait. Congressman Serrano, Democrat from the Bronx. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Getting your reactions to President Bush's Iraq address, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. If you were for the war in the past, are you still for it with this? If you're related to somebody in the military or are someone in the military, what do you think? Anyone may call, 212-433-9692. And Dallas in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello, Dallas.
Hello, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you.
My comment is basically I agree with your point, is that leaving these troops there to hold the areas that we've cleared out.
Let me make clear that I've just been asking questions so far, but go ahead.
Sure, well, I understood the thrust of your question, which is what's to prevent these insurgents from simply either going somewhere else in all of Iraq instead of just Baghdad, or even worse, just, you know, pretend to be good and sucking up some of that good economic aid that's going to be coming that way until we leave. How long do those troops have to stay there and hold those areas? Forever? I mean, the plan is so vague and so open-ended as to be no different from what it was before.
Thank you very much. And we are going to go now to Congressman Jose Serrano, Democrat from the Bronx. Congressman, thanks for coming on WNYC today.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
Your reaction to the president's speech?
Well, it was more the same. It's what you've heard from so many people. There doesn't seem to be a military solution to the quagmire in Iraq, only a political solution. And to bring more people and escalate the war, in my opinion, and the opinion of many, does not foresee victory, but rather put in harm's way even more men and women from our country and armed forces. So
the president's point seems to be that this is so important for America that it's worthy of one more try to send in more troops. He admits he was wrong for not sending in enough before, to clear and really hold Baghdad and Anbar province in a way that hasn't been done before, and hold the Iraqi government to some kinds of benchmarks that he's been setting recently. Then if it doesn't work, maybe then we give up. But let's try it for real this time, now that they think they know what went wrong. Why not?
No, I don't think he's going to try it for real. There is no solution, and he will keep trying. It's interesting. He's getting points for admitting he was wrong, but he wasn't admitting that he was really wrong, which was to get into Iraq in the first place. Iraq is not the reason for September 11th. Iraq is not the reason for terrorism throughout the world. We're in the wrong place at the wrong time against the wrong so-called enemy. And that's the mistake. In other words, we can't focus just on what is going on now and how to clean it up. We have to go back to day one and still ask ourselves, how did we allow this administration to get us into this war? That's been my position from the beginning.
So but here we are. It's not day one anymore. We're here today.
Well, you know, but that's what we Americans do, which is very sad. We're always concentrating on why we're here, and we don't try to stop future mistakes by remembering why we got there.
Well,
there is no reason to be there, and we should get out tomorrow morning if possible.
You say there's no solution and there's no reason to be there, but let me play you a clip of what the president said last night about the consequences of what he calls failure.
The consequences of failure are clear. Radical Islamic extremists would grow in strength and gain new recruits. They would be in a better position to topple moderate governments, create chaos in the region, and use oil revenues to fund their ambitions. Iran would be emboldened in its pursuit of nuclear weapons. Our enemies would have a safe haven from which to plan and launch attacks on the American people. On September the 11th, 2001, we saw what a refuge for extremists on the other side of the world could bring to the streets of our own cities. For the safety of our people, America must succeed in Iraq.
Congressman Serrano, your reaction to that clip?
That's the same rhetoric that got us into the war. Remember weapons of mass destruction and how we were going to be destroyed if we didn't invade Iraq?
But he's not.
But listen, you're playing that clip for the right person, because it was I who said, and I wasn't prophetic, it just came to mind at that point. I said when I voted against the initial action, I said invading Iraq will be the equivalent of an American-sponsored membership drive for al-Qaeda. So the membership drive has taken place, and it's grown by 47%, the membership of al-Qaeda, according to our own government figures, because we invaded Iraq. He can't use that reason again. That reason already took place when we invaded Iraq.
So play out how you think things will go if the United States pulls out. He says, we heard it in that clip, Iraq would be a failed state to the extent that al-Qaeda would be able to really set up shop there and plan future attacks against America. What do you think would happen if the U.S. pulls out with respect to al-Qaeda?
I think if we pull out, there will be a civil war, the continuation of the ongoing civil war. But you know something? If we pull out tomorrow morning, that civil war would take place. I believe we pull out in 5 years. That civil war would take place. So the question is, do I, as a member of Congress, want to expose more of our citizens to losing their lives in a situation which is going to be the same whether we get out today or get out in 5 years? As far as Iran is a separate and yet related subject. I agree. We should continue to try to talk to Iran, to try to bring them into our circle, our sphere of influence, and know that we funded Iraq against Iran, and now we can't complain that Iran has its eyes on Iraq, because Iraq was our tool against Iran in the past, and we can't do it again. Let's talk to everyone in the region, and let's try to get people to understand that we won't tolerate certain things, but we're not about invading their land every couple of years.
Congressman Jose Serrano, Democrat from the Bronx, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. More reactions in a minute. Our next guest will be Frederick Kagan, a prominent military historian from West Point and a proponent of sending more troops to Iran. To Iraq. Somebody thinks he wants to send troops to Iran, too, and we'll ask him about that. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.